Welcome to episode 108 of Fully Boosted, a War Machine Hordes podcast. I'm Grant, and I just got my voice back.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Brad.
I'm Pete.
I'm also Brad.
Great. We're off to a fantastic start, guys.
The gang's all here, boys.
We're all here. Fresh off the Southern Ontario Open this past weekend, where we had a great time, and Mr. McWaters took second in Masters, so congrats, buddy.
Thanks. It was a really good game, really good run.
Played against my former Signar podcast buddy, Jake Wilstrup, who came over with his crew from England. So congrats to Jake for sweeping champs and masters with Zoll 2.
Fuck, was his army beautiful. I just got to say.
Yeah, it was weird. I feel like I saw it before somewhere. But
So for context, guys, Jake messaged me before the Sioux, and I was like, I don't know if I can fly in with an army. And I was like, well, what army are you playing? And he's like, well, I want to play some Scorn. I'm like, well, Bubba has all my Scorn models, so I'm sure I can find someone to hook you up. So I immediately messaged Pete, and I was like, Pete, can Jake borrow your Scorn? He's like, well, it's not my Scorn, it's Trish's. So I messaged Trish, and was like, can Jake borrow your Scorn? She's like, yeah, sure, I don't care. And then Jake won the Sioux, both champions and masters with it. He's a fucking monster, that guy.
Yeah, and his other list he didn't even have. He was just like, well, Grant, I know you have a turtle I could use, and I think Bubba has this that I could use. So, like, his second list and was basically just pieced together from other people he knew that had Scorn, which was great.
He one-listed Zoll 2 through literally 100% of the matchups in Champions and Masters, and was able to take it all down. He played exceptionally well, and he's a true gentleman to play against. I absolutely love that guy.
So, Matt, Do you think that is – so I remember we watched the stream on the way home while I was driving. Like, Trish would yell stuff out to me. Mike Pierre, I think it was him. I don't know. The name doesn't matter. Someone – I don't know if it was a joke, but they said Zoll 2 OP. So is Jake's performance more on his skill – and I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but to one list something that many times, like, it's got to be skill, right? Not just power of the warlock.
I mean, Jake is the one list master.
Yeah, okay, right.
He played Haley 3 for 400 games and maintained an amazing win rate with it, and closed out many high level events, performed so many top tables. I mean, like, that guy is the type of player that you can put a wet piece of cardboard in his hand and he'll make it to the finals. I think what you find generally at top tables in every convention is that the lists people play don't really matter as much as the players who are playing them. The lists you play allow you to win, have matchups that you win because of the list, but whenever you get to the top tables, you're always going to be playing things that have answers for every list that's possibly considered against other top players that are playing at just the same level you are. And you're not going to win that event because of list. You're going to win that event because you have the skill, expertise, and knowledge to win it.
I was going to say, I don't think there's anything wrong with Zoll, but then I went 3-1 in champs, so there must be something wrong with Zoll.
So,
no, I'm just kidding. I don't think there is. I think he's fine.
Zoll's very strong. He's also a linear skew but a linear skew that also has lots of reach and recursion and tools and flexibility and is just, like, generally a really powerful list. So, like, those kind of lists tend to perform really well and has very few dodges. So, like, it's not that uncommon to go undefeated with a list like that. Like, I would be, like, when I played at Captain Con, I basically one-listed stuff similar, and I only lost one game. And in the top eight.
And right? when you remember he has vision, it's even better.
Yeah. You know, I feel like that's a subtle stab at me that I never cast vision when I played Zoll 2. And because I literally didn't remember he had it.
Right. That's the stab. Not that you didn't cast it, that you didn't know he had it.
Yeah, I know, Grant. Okay. I was like 15 to 20 games in before you told me he had vision. And I was like, oh, yeah, he does, doesn't he? I guess I should probably use that at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great.
So, as we're talking about events, and before we get into the weeds, there's definitely been a lot. I wouldn't say a lot, but there's been some acknowledgement about the event statistics for both champions and masters. So I've got the champions up here right now. We've got 11 Scorn, 11 Circle, 8 Kador, and as you scan through the list, there's no Signar.
Yep.
Any thoughts on that? Because I know right now the Signar Facebook group is a dumpster fire. People are freaking out.
So let me ask Matt a question real quick before we he gives reasoning. Is it Signar overall, or do you think people just saw the other lists, the other options in other factions, and were just like, that's like a how do I dodge fucking? I'm just gonna say Zol, like, and then just decided like I'll just play a different faction.
So, like, on a very real note, Signar and Champions is actually very strong. I actually considered bringing Signar to the Sioux and Champions. It's what? One of the top factions in terms of power in Champions.
I'm expecting a huge blowback already.
What was your primary reason for not bringing it?
Mostly because I didn't want to get all the models together and get practice games in, and I felt like Grimkin I could play with less practice games.
Okay.
By the way, just for context, I had literally not played either of my lists for Champions before I played them on the Friday. It was an absolute shit show my first game, trying to read all my cards and how they work. It was fucking hilarious.
Nice. So, Matt, based off of that declaration of the power of Signar, what would your pair have been?
Siege 2, Kara Sloan, probably.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, there's other options, like Maddox is super good.
No, I mean, you could run Kray, but I mean, I think if I'm putting the best two lists together, I think it's Siege 2, Gravediggers, and Sloan Heavy Metal.
But it's in the context of Champions. Like, this is what people forget, and Hungerford even said it on the stream that happened today. He's like, a lot of people look at Champions in the context of Masters, but that's not the reality of the situation. Champions is its own microcosm of how balance works, right?
Sure.
And whoever just dropped something, I'm assuming it's Bradley with his soup.
Nope, that was me. My whiskey stones clinked together. I deeply apologize. I will be meeting every drink.
Yeah, fuck off, Matt. Oh, wait, that's me. So Champions is its own little like micro version of the overall meta, right? So Signar has a credible answer into, I think, everything that's on Champions. I don't think there's a list where they're like, we need to hard dodge that. So you play like a really good Gravediggers list into pretty much like almost everything, and you have access to Kray, Sloan, Maddox, which are great into a lot of the field. I think that the reason you don't see a lot of Signar is because in Masters they have four dodges that happen to be some of the most powerful things in the format, and that's a pretty big issue. And you know, the other side of that coin is like there's a lot of factions that perform a lot better in Champions than they do in Masters. Just because of, like, they get to dodge a lot of the things that they're worried about. Like, gun lines tend not to be as big of an issue in Champions. Gatsby 3-9 Slayers is nothing in Champions. And so, like, you get access to a wider, wider field of off-meta lists to play into. So you need to stop looking at things as Champions as an indication of where things are in Masters.
No, that's fair, and I didn't actually go through the matches to see where there was anything bad. I was just looking at, like, here's what I would likely think would be the most prevalent list if I was prepping to see Signar in Champions. But you're right. I didn't think about maybe somebody just not wanting to travel with two factions to play Signar in Champs and something else in Masters.
I mean, I think this is a lot of the reason why you don't see a lot of Scorn at major events, like, or most of the Scorn you see don't have, like, all of the battle engines. The Sioux's kind of different because all the Canadians and locals play their Scorn, but, like, if you go to most, like, American events, there's not very much Scorn because it's so hard to travel with it.
Yeah, we had to dedicate a whole half a car seat to my tray with my huge bases. It's quite obnoxious to travel.
But on the topic of Champions, the outliers in terms of balance, in terms of power, are definitely Grimkin, Scorn, and Tharn. They're the, like, we get to play our meta Masters lists in Champions. Grimkin gets to play Wanderer, Bump, and Child DM, which is fantastic. And you get Iona or Wormwood or whatever. And then you also get, Zol 2 and Makeda 3, which are, like, those are just Masters pairings that happen to be in Champions. And, like, That means that a lot of people have a lot of reps with those lists. They have a lot of practice, and they're very comfortable with them, and they perform well in champions.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So where do we want to start with the weekend? Is there anything else you want to touch on, Pete, about that?
I don't think so. I think as we discuss the event, stuff will come out. So we're good. I think Thursday obviously was our travel day. I don't want to turn this into a fully boosted goes to the con, but obviously everyone went, and we're going to try to not have a lot of inside jokes. Friday was champions. Funny story, the pairings go up, and I walk up and look, and I see my son's name. I'm like, what the heck? So we got paired up. We played first round. I had a talk with the event organizers later. Traditionally they've done a really good job of not having, people from the same meta play each other unless you write down a meta that they don't know. And then you end up getting, you end up getting paired against Brad round one. So I was really confused by this. And this is just, for event organizers out there, so that there's a little bit of awareness. So apparently they utilize Conflict Chamber and PG Swiss. And so what happens is you put in all your list information in Conflict Chamber, and then it is imported into PG Swiss. Everything is populated, and you run the tournament. PG Swiss is really good about identifying when you do your pairings, who's playing against someone from the same meta, if they've played before, if they've even played on the same table, etc. Well, when you import stuff in from Conflict Chamber, there is no meta field. So when they run the first round and look at the screen, nothing is color-coded. So it's not painfully obvious that someone from the same area is playing. So I know they've already reached out to the various people who are, writing that software. So hopefully we'll see a change here shortly. It was a surprise to, have driven 8 hours, with somebody, and then play first round with them. And it was funny, JVM was telling me that used to happen to him and Tom Guan all the time. No matter where they went, they kept getting paired up. And I responded like, well, you didn't make Tom Guan. I made my son. Like, it kind of sucks to get beat by him round one. So that was my champions run.
I actually didn't play in champions. I decided I'd just grind out some Iron Arena. It had been a while since I'd had convergence on the table in any meaningful manner. My first game ended up being Thursday night, and just never stopped playing. I got in almost six games that day, so it was just a lot of convergence and trying to make Aurora work, which was interesting to say.
Yeah, we actually got a game in as well. That was a pretty fun game. It was Dreamer and Locke, right?
Yeah, I played Locke into you.
Yeah, that was fun.
Was it real quick? Was it Thursday? When we went to the Korean barbecue place, and we were trying to get dinner.
Yes.
And everywhere was too full.
Yeah, that was very odd. Everywhere was packed. Like, it'd be a Friday night at like 8 o'clock at night, and it was.
And we told place, we're like, we don't need to sit 10. You could split us into 2 5s. And they're like, no, we can't handle that. We're like, okay, let's walk somewhere else. So I was trying to just like place my day.
That was Thursday.
Okay. All right. Matt, go ahead with your champions if you want to talk about it.
I mean, round one, I played against the one, the only, the ever so handsome Danny McGeehan. We played on the stream table, had a really good game of Wanderer Bump versus Iona Tharn, and it was a hilariously good time. The Malady Man Monkey Boys are the greatest models in War Machine.
don't tell Pete that.
No. Mine killed some shit this past con. I'm super happy with it. And the Cradle song was like legitimately relevant. I was super happy with how they performed.
My monkey man. So I had like this clockatrice in the left hand zone, and he's like, I can get like four weavers on it. It's gonna fucking die. And I was like, yeah, you got it, man. He moves the first weaver in, and I counter charge through it to block the landing spot for all the other weavers.
Bullshit.
And I was like, well, I'm out of command, so I can't attack you, so you're just there. So he had to run the Weavers in, and then the Monkey Bite applies, so everything's in melee with it, so they all have minus two to hit. So he just misses. And I'm like, this is the greatest model! Go, Monkey, go! Round two, I ended up playing against Ben Hampshire from Team England, England Knights, I believe. And we played the Wanderer Mirror.
I feel like I might have helped that.
The Wanderer Mirror was absolutely probably the funnest game I've played of War Machine in a long time, other than my game against Jake. We were just like in. At one point, I walked my Wanderer into engagement with his on his side of the table, like an inch outside his deployment zone, inside an acid pool, engaging him and being like, "What are you gonna do, bud? You know, you're gonna try to fight me?" And he's like, "Nope, I take my road marker and walk away from you. I'm out of here." I spent the whole game chasing him around the table. It was really fun. That was a genuinely enjoyable game. I played a lot of really good games that day. I don't really remember all of them. I was so tired and exhausted. Yeah,
I was trying to piece through my pairings, and I meant to take a picture of everyone I played. And, of course, I stopped doing that after round one. So the only person I could say for sure is I played Simon Withers round one, who we had dinner with the night before. So that so that was easy. So I ran Zalt 2 Makeda 3, although I did not ever intend on dropping Makeda 3, and in fact I didn't even have the Exalted Court. I had Makeda, but I didn't have the Exalted Court with me, so I figured if it came to that I'd figure it out. But I literally had no intention of dropping her. And I did not do that. I'm trying to remember the game that I lost, and I can't remember, and it'll come back to me, but I ended 3-1. I played Great War Machine, had great games against everybody I played, and Zal was super fun, as always.
Nice. I know, Brad, you had some pretty spicy...
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So you had a good stream game round one. I'm going to jump right to my round three, and then I'll talk about round two in a moment. But I think my stream game outdoes your stream game.
I commentated your stream game.
I guess you were part of both then, but your stream game with Danny, you were polite the whole time and like working together with him. Minerva and I were just saying awful shit to each other while we were playing. So you missed out on doing that.
I walked by, and Minerva's there in a wife beater with his armband, and I was like, damn, shit's real. Shit is real.
Although, Minerva's just, full disclosure, one of my locals, and there's like a giant group chat for the Mark Howard Dojo, and because of that string game, his name in the chat is now Brad's opponent. because you and Bubba both never called him his name. You only ever called him the Cator player and Brad's opponent.
Nice.
<That's awesome. laughs> I mean, it was mostly Bubba, but it was a lot of Brad's opponent and Cator player to refer to him. But had a wicked awesome game where he got ahead on me, and Dice he got ahead on attrition. I was ahead on scenario, but Dice were friendly to me and allowed me to even up attrition with only a couple models doing so for me. That was a really awesome game. My round two, though, I only played two rounds of my round two, but it might have been my favorite game I played the entire weekend. I brought Iacos 2 as my other list with Denegra 1, and I played it into Morvana 1 Tharn.
How did that work?
So I got to go first, which was nice. Did I go? Yeah, I went first. So I moved things forward just out of the charge range of Lord of the Feast and Call and all that, and positioned pretty aggressively. He goes and starts measuring the threat range of Feated Stalkers, and almost his whole army ends up in his deployment zone again. like, Lord of the Feast and Call both move back, like, a good 7 inches. So that felt pretty great. But I was like, alright, well, I think I'm going to lose a long game here, so I'm going to try and kill you. Morvana is on 3?
Oh, Jesus, this one?
Okay. 3 transfers. There is a satyr, like directly in front of her. To the right of the satyr, a little bit behind it, is Brennos. Behind that is a Wolfrider champion, and to the left of the satyr is a crockpot.
Are you talking about a white squall coming?
Oh, multiple of them, bud.
Oh my God.
So the upkeep sliding touch on one stalker that's within 16 inches of Morvana. But to get all this, like, my arc node can't get where I need it to get the right angle without taking, like, a couple free strikes to or just be engaged. So I was like, well, fuck that plan. I gotta use Iacos to get in there. So we feed with Iacos. He walks forward 9, jumps forward his 5. I skipped one step. We upkeep the sliding touch and... We upkeep it for free without ammonia. And we gave 1 to the sliding touch stalker. So he goes forward, and then he jumps farther in. He white squalls the pot, is the first model. We hit, and we throw it 5 inches. So it's back his deployment zone all the way out of there. He also camps carnage. So I'm on no focus, and I'm in front of my entire army on no camp. So I either get this or Iacos is dead. He then punches a Bloodweaver Night Witch and kills her. I took a spicy Ogryn Bokor in the list, which was actually pretty clutch, because if I don't, Iacos dies on bottom of 1. Because I surrounded him with Ironmongers and Warwit Sirens and the objective as a shield guard for both Detchek and Iacos, so there's no landing spot for Lord of the Feast. So my Ogryn Bokor goes, charges a Tharn Ravager, and because of Client, cuts him in half. Deathjack goes and white squalls the Satyr, but only rolls a 2, so we don't clear a landing spot for 2 stalkers like I was hoping for. So we empower up our stalker that's going in, as well as the next one. Our Sliding Touch stalker goes in. He's got full focus. Well, he has to jump, so he's on 4, but makes his 4 initials all under Carnage, all at dice off 1. We burn through all 3 of his transfers. And 1 attack miss. So 3 transfers gone, no damage. So now here comes the fun part of the plan. We take another stalker that cannot reach Morvana, and we jump and start attacking my stalker in the back arc. after his attacks, we knock out his movement, and he's like on 6 boxes. Denegro Zero upkept Witch Bond, so her arc node runs, and we Venom Spray my Stalker in the back arc, also getting Morvana. So my Stalker's movement's out, so we hit. I don't think we kill it. How did I kill it? Maybe the Venom Spray killed it. I don't know. Let me try to remember. Did I put a second Stalker in to kill it? It doesn't really matter. All in all, Venom Spray needs a boosted 11. I think she's a 15-14, a boosted 11 to hit Morvana. We hit it. Sliding Touch is still active because the Stalker is still within melee of her that had Sliding Touch. It's about 12. So it's only dice off 2 or something. I think I do like 8 damage to her on a pretty spicy roll. And then I cannot remember what I used to kill. Oh, I remember now. Charybdis goes forward, who does not have range to Morvana, and just sprays my Stalker to kill it. So we're all in. Charybdis sprays, kills the Stalker. My last Stalker goes, is able to jump and land within melee range of Morvana. He only has 1 focus after his jump. And with his, 3rd and final attack after missing his 2nd attack, we're able to kill Morvana. So it took my entire army, 2 white squalls, and killing my own model for a 35-minute top of 2 assassination run.
Only you, that Brad. Only you.
So that was great. I ended up losing in champions in round 4, also to Ben Hampshire. Clockatree sprays are really good, and they're even better when you don't measure their full threat range.
That sounds bad.
Yeah, I also actually are on the top of 2. My army got stuck on itself, and it just crumbled. Things are bad.
So, Pete, you dropped after round 1, right?
Yep.
Grant, you went 3-1?
I did, yeah, I remembered. I lost to Paul Bartlett with the Zaltumir. He had the Mammoth, and that was a big difference there.
And Brad, you went 3-1?
I went 3-1.
Look at those fully, and Ryan, you didn't play in Champions.
I did not play in Champions, no. I was just grinding out Iron Arena games.
With Look at those fully boosted boys.
We did it. With the luck of tiebreakers, both myself and Mike Stone landed in top 8.
Yep. Derek Senstrom, another local, was at 10th. Attilio, mm-hmm. Danny at 12th, Attilio 13, and me down at the bottom at 18.
What place was I?
I don't know. Fucking 70th? Who knows?
You were 6th. I'm sorry, Matt.
6th?
Yep.
Okay.
Because you're... But how did I... What?
Okay, that's cool. I was 6th. Neat.
Yeah.
Were you 3-1, bud?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Look at us. Look at us doing things.
We're learning from Matt. We're gonna do well in champions. That's our thing.
At some point, fully boosted is not gonna be the scrub cast.
Well, Matt ruined that for all of us.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's fair.
Fucking numbnuts over here had to start doing well in events.
I mean, I was doing well before I got on the cast.
We were hoping you'd get worse when you joined us.
I mean, despite your best efforts.
You're making us look bad.
Yeah, whose fucking idea was that, to bring on a ringer that's actually good?
I think it's... I want to blame Pete. I mean...
Yeah, I think that's fine.
The mistake is I fed him, and now he won't stay away.
Yeah, yeah. You let him in your house, you opened a can of tuna, and now he sleeps on your couch.
Has everyone stayed at Pete's house here in the chat?
I haven't stayed there, but I've been to Pete's house.
Fucking up, bud.
I've played games there, but I have also not stayed.
Nothing like a Soretti breakfast. You guys are missing out.
Fuck.
Yep.
Yeah, special shout out to Trish, who made me breakfast every night of the con.
Well, fucking Trish is the best.
Oh, right, because you guys have the kitchen over in your room, right?
Yeah, it was... she did set the smoke alarm off day one. So that was kind of fun. I was worried it was the whole building, but it was only our room, so it was good. But yeah, she took very good care of the Soretti and McWaters extended family. So
Seth brought us Pop Tarts, which was super clutch, because I did not wake up at enough time to eat breakfast at all. So
Seth bringing Pop Tarts does not make him the best War Machine mom. That still goes to Trish.
No, for sure. But I just want to know. I appreciated being able to grab the Pop Tarts in the morning and run downstairs.
So summarizing champions, we had a British finals in the champions of Mark versus Jake,
yep.
And it was a super super good game. Jake won champions, and I think that pretty much wraps that up. Anything left to say about champions, guys?
Oh, if you want to hear some real in-depth analysis, you can watch the stream of that game with me and Matt, and then it deteriorates really quickly.
So, So the funny thing about that stream is, like, right at deployment, I was like, all right, so these are the things that are going to happen. And, like, this is how the game's going to unfold. And then I left. and then the game went exactly as I called it. And, like, Grant came up to me, like, an hour later. And he's like, Matt, it happened!
Yep. It did.
If you want to watch a more entertaining game, though, go find my game against Kador. Fucking A-plus game, bud.
Sure. I commentated that one, too, and that was hilarious.
They'll just let anybody on that, as it turns out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moose Machine did all the streaming. George set up all the stuff.
Yeah, George did great.
It is a sweet setup.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. He did a fantastic job. I appreciated the hell
Big
out
fan.
Of it. All right, boys. Did we do anything? What did we do Friday night? Nothing? Went to bed, I think.
I was in bed by like 9:30.
You were.
That was my goal. Every year I go to that con, and the first night we stay up till 1, the second night we stay up till 2, so by the time the Masters rolls around, I play like 2 rounds and drop. So I was ready to go the distance this time around.
I don't know what day I played Keyforge.
That was Saturday.
Yeah, I don't remember anything crazy going on Friday night either.
No, see, Friday was the Keyforge tournament, I think.
Okay, so yeah, I played that. It's kind of a fun game. Definitely
Saturday though. Saturday about the event and Saturday night were a lot of fun.
Yeah, let's get into that.
I played Jake. I played a game of War Machine with Jake until 3 in the morning Friday night. And
I played Mike Stone Friday night in a pickup game.
Yeah, we're good. This isn't that late at night. And then I get back to the hotel at like 3:30 in the morning, and I'm like, oh my god, I've made such bad decisions. Oh man, it was rough. Pro tip: don't play War Machine till 3 a.m. when you have Masters at 8 a.m. the next day.
Or do, because Matt finished second and his opponent finished first. What kind of...
I don't know.
Or do.
That's actually the trick, is you need to play hungover and completely and utterly sleep-deprived. I mean...
What kind of shit advice is that, Matt? keeping your secrets to yourself, wizard.
You caught me.
Yeah, I know. Fucking lying piece of shit. So anyway, how was Saturday for everyone?
Let's start with Ryan, because Ryan didn't get to play in Champions, so he...
He could have.
I'm just saying he didn't.
I did not. No, I am weak. So Saturday, who did I end up playing round? I don't remember who I played round one now.
Good start. Yeah, what faction was it?
Fantastic.
you guys normally don't start with me. My ass normally sneaks in toward the middle. No.
What day of the week was it?
I don't even know what day of the week it was.
It was Saturday.
Yeah,
I'm happy to talk about my Masters experience.
Yeah, go ahead. Talk about yours first.
All right, great. I'll start. So round one, I get the distinct and distinct privilege and honor of playing Dave Beauchamp, who plays King and Six Clocks into me. I believe he also has Child and I want to say Dreamer, and they're all in Dark Menagerie.
Before you continue, I have a quick question, Brad.
Yes.
Did he offer to concede if you let him play Infernals?
No, that he did every round after our game. I guess he was doing that until he lost, or maybe he doesn't like me. I know we never met each other before this game, so.
Obviously, he probably doesn't like you.
I'm going to go with that one as well.
Yeah, it makes sense. Math checks out.
So he plays King, I play Venithrax. So it's on standoff. It's a real kind of even game where I'm throwing away scavengers to contest the zone. He's throwing away gremlin swarms or putting a clock in my zone. And we keep trading point for point. I go second as well, so I have the benefit of bottom of seven while trading point for point. So I feel pretty good about that. Though there comes a point in the game where he's spending a lot more time on his turns than I am. Part of that might be because he's, I think, still getting used to Grimkin, and part of it might be because I'm playing a wall of countercharges to try and figure out where everything should go. So I forget what his time was when he went into his top of four, but my top of three, my bottom of three, I know I got very aggressive to the point of overextending as his time was just getting low, right? Like, I wanted to force him to start spending time on things. So while I forget what his time was at his start of round four, I know when I ended my round four, so going into his top of five, I know that I had 30 minutes left and he had five.
Wow.
So my plan for the rest of the game at that point was really just to make sure that I wasn't going to lose on scenarios. So the game actually ended 3-3. So all the points were scored from round four and before. And then we got two stuck in on each other. But my plan from that point in the rest of the game, because I had three Slayers and a Scavenger and Venithrax and a Necrotech, as well as the Combine, he had his whole army minus some Gremlin Swarms, was to just start forcing things that would make him spend time. So Venithrax was always on four focus. I was always in spots and zones that were annoying. And aside from one Slayer who ran the hook route and found his way to King of Nothing, we just started throwing Clockatrices into other Clockatrices to knock them down, and having Venithrax tag them all to make sure he had to do auto repairs at the start of his turn. So, like, when he started his round five, he went from 5 minutes to four, just shaking knockdowns and doing auto repairs and actually marking the repairs, and, like, clearing his flat, clearing his clouds. Like, a minute gone just in, like, the pre-turn nonsense. Meanwhile, Venithrax is, like, still behind two Slayers and on four focus, so, like, fairly safe. If he had more time, I was probably dead. If you could, like, land multiple clocks in on me. Instead, he, like, goes for a bit of a scenario play, sends a clock in over onto the objective, but Venifex gets a free strike and knocks out, like, two systems in one go. And all in all, I think he ended his turn with, like, 2 minutes left or something. So we do all the same things again. We throw all the clocks into each other. Venifex charges Slayer charges the King of Nothing, and we just tag Clockatrice again to put damage on him. By the time he ends his round six, he has, I think, 5 seconds left. So do all the same things again, and he clocks on his top of seven.
Whew. That's a good start to the day, Brad. That's a fun one.
Yeah, it was a fucking scary game. I saw Beauchamp's name, and I was like, well, fuck, I lose round one.
How do we want to do this? Do we want to go? Was that the game?
I'm not going to go round by round. No, I know. I thought that was my most interesting game. No, I ended up losing the next round in an exact list mirror match from a guy we played at OTC. Then had a fun game round three that I was able to win. And then whether he saw the list from someone else playing it or made it himself, I got to play against Rashet, the triple huge base with double turtle and a Supreme Guardian in the last round. Really. Second?
Who'd you play?
Boy. I know his last name was Houston, and his first name was...
Buckets.
2 seconds.
Smiling Jack.
Thurston Houston.
Oh, Thurston. That's one of Josh's locals.
Yeah.
Was it the build with the Eridus Sentinel?
Yep.
I like that build.
Yeah, so that game was fucking me up a bit. I was able to kill a turtle. And then Rashet feated, and I thought I was going to kill a second turtle through Rashet feat, and I left it alive on, like, four. So I took this, like, pretty greedy line of using Axiara to give repo to Denegra after she attacked a Supreme Guardian to, what's it called? The Shadowbind. Taking a defensive strike on the way in. The defensive strike hit. I knew it needed eights, but it ended up hitting me. And I got down to like 10 boxes after that, I just spent focus, and then I died to 2 Breath of Corruptions. If I had killed that other turtle, Denegra would have just ran to that flank at that side of the table. But without killing that turtle, I thought he was just going to clean up that side, and that was an awful idea. So, because the other thing, there's like all of the beast handlers still behind it. So I brought it down to 4, it was going to be back on 20 at the end of the turn.
Jeez.
Right, that's so nice. I took this really aggressive line because I didn't kill the turtle, and I ended up dying due to double breath of corruption because of the defensive strike. But that was like the only thing that could get on to me was the double breath of corruption. So all in all, 2-2 at the end of Masters, but with some really excellent games on the way there.
You know who I'm really interested in hearing from is Pete. I haven't heard shit about your Masters.
Okay, so my first round was a Crix player. Basically I looked at his list and I didn't see an out for Cloud. So I went ahead and dropped King of Nothing. He dropped Scar One. It was their classic Scar One Dark Host. He had 4 Stalkers in his battle group. So I knew I had to prioritize that. He ended up giving me one super early. Like I really didn't have to do anything to just spray it and kill it with 2 clocks. And then, we just went back and forth and I was able to get the win on that one. It was a really fun game. Round 2, I had a troll player, and he dropped Madrak. And again, I 0 outs for Clouds. So I felt I had to go with King of Nothing. From his 3-list pair had no outs for Clouds. Ouch. So, it was Mirage. So it was to his credit, he stayed in it and played. It was a very challenging game for him. He had a min unit of Long Riders that took the entire game to come around the board to try to get on me. Mm. And he went to charge the objective and did impact attacks on King of Nothing. And I had Baron Tunglick in my list who just was there to parlay. So I probably should have called a judge, but I was like, you know what? Yeah, I think impact attacks work because they don't target. Unfortunately, they're still attacks, so they still target. And he actually, wasn't able to hit me anyway. So that game was, I don't want to call it a slam dunk, but it was definitely, I was definitely advantaged into it. Cause Wraith Baned Cockatrice Sprays into champions, just, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. That sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Yowza.
Yeah. Yeah. So then round 3, I got the Grimkin Mirror, and I played Heretic, Bump, Dreamer, and King and DM. And my opponent had Child, Dreamer, and DM, and King in DM. So I said, all right, let's have a gentleman's agreement, and let's not play the King Mirror. And he goes, absolutely, shook my hand. And then I'm looking at the list. I'm like, could we have a gentleman's agreement where we don't play the Dreamer Mirror? And he wouldn't agree. So it was, I forget his name. Matt, help me out.
That's Manu Philippe. Yeah, it's Manu Philippe. He's one of my locals.
Yeah, yeah.
So, really great guy. Absolutely a gentleman and scholar. Love
yeah, no, I had a blast playing him. So the matchup was I played Heretic Bump, and he played Dreamer. So obviously, Sacrifice was going to be a big part of his gameplay, and I was going to try to leverage my Arcana, my Trump Arcana, into him. So I did two things wrong in that match. One, I wasted my Trump Arcana, and two, I sacrificed, or I triggered Sacrifice like a chump. So that won him the game. We went all the way to 7B, and he was able to win by 2 points, two control points. So I learned a lot in that game, and it was an absolute pleasure playing him, and I look forward to hopefully playing him at the tech, if possible. But that was just a great game. And then my last round was against one of our locals, Derek Senstrom. he's playing Kador. Trish just recently made the switch to Kador, and we've been grinding out Karchev gains. So I looked at his list, and I knew he was going to drop Karchev. Although his Karchev list was kind of spicy, he had a Destroyer with the Adjunct. So I dropped King of Nothing with the clocks, and I was basically going to just Cloud Wall and try to deny him on Scenario. And every turn, he was just taking pot shots with a Eyeless Sight Magical Destroyer. So that was pretty fun. But I was able to work out a way to get three clocks onto Karchev, and that's all it took to win that game. So I went 3-1 in Masters.
Sweet.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So I placed 16th.
Yep.
That's probably my best showing. That's absolutely my best showing at Sioux. So I'm really happy with how the day went.
Yeah, I think I didn't talk to you a lot, and all of a sudden I went to go see, and then I took a picture because it was posted. I was like, Pete, 16th, that's what's up. And I don't think I saw you a lot to be able to know how your games were going up to that point.
Yeah, just for context, there was 107 people in the Masters.
Yeah, it was pretty tight.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely reasonable. So I don't remember the name, but I do remember the game now. I don't know why I was so messed up. I didn't remember the game at first.
What was the game, Ryan?
It was Orion into what's the caster's name?
give us a faction. I thought you had it.
No, it was Circle. I thought I had it too now, then all of a sudden it just like flopped out of my brain.
Balder won.
I don't know. No, Una 2. It wasn't.
All right, Grant, how was your Masters?
Oh, my God. Ryan, get back to us another 10 minutes. Grant, how'd you do?
All right, great. So I started with the Danny Daigle match, round one.
So, it is Danny the Bagel Daigle.
Oh, right? I'm sorry. Danny the Bagel Daigle. So I get the Bagel round one, and he's playing Triple Primal Tears.
He's gonna hate that, by the way. I just keep doing it.
Okay.
That sounds like an actual name.
And so he drops, so I'm still riding high off the Zol 1 yesterday, Zol 2 yesterday, so I know I'm dropping Zol 2. He drops Kallus 1 and the scenario is Standoff. I'm not gonna spend a ton of time on this, but the mistake I made was I didn't recognize that he was gonna build Fort Kickass around his own zone. And I made the mistake of attacking one of the Hellmouth Tentacles and not putting a bunker in my own zone. So he was able to put a Hellmouth in my zone to contest when I could not get anything anywhere near his zone because of a mock. So he scored that first point and then basically just sat there and didn't do anything for the rest of the game while I tried to claw my way back. We ended up trading control points. I think that might have been the fastest game I've ever played. We got to turn 7, and I think he had like 20-some minutes left on his clock because just nothing was happening. It was just me trying to contest, clear my zone, and score, and then him just score, clearing his zone, scoring, and passing clocks. Like, the onus was on me to try to get through, and eventually I had to just bust out the Supreme Guardian and try to clear some Chosen. But by that point, it was too late, and I had to spend the rest of my game basically trying to clear enough stuff, and I couldn't get back in that game.
Was that the game that you you killed more of your models than he did?
Yes, I killed more of my own models than he did in that game. Yep. It was great.
That's awesome.
So that was a good game. The next round, I got, I think it was this round, I got Raymond Bozinski. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. He dropped Ossian. I again dropped Zal 2. And that game was going super fucking bad for me. So I decided I was just going to start throwing all my Zal tokens on Zal. And he looks and goes, "Did this turn into Fury? Because that's a lot of Zal tokens you're putting on Zal." And I'm like, "Yep." And he's like, "So how far can you sling those spells?" I was like, "Well, I got Sunder Spirits and I have an Arc Node right over there." So he's able to take the Arc Node out. And he made a mistake where he didn't line his Destors up base to base. So there was a sliver of line of sight through. So I was able to charge one of his Destors with Zal and then had to call the judge to make sure that I would have line of sight. Spent a bunch of time figuring out my Fury because I think I was sitting on 7. I think I had like 13 Fury, 13 or 14. So I'm trying to figure out how to best use my Sunder Spirits. I do all the Sunder Spirits. I leave him on 2, and I look around. I'm like, I got to have something else I can do. Like, I'm not done. There's got to be something else. And all of a sudden, I realize my bronze back is on the other side of the building. So I measure out 4 inches, see if I can get within an inch of his Dester. I do. I get over and I throw the Dester into Ossian and need to roll a 4 to kill him. And I do that. And it was a really, really fun game. one of my better wins just because normally I don't see something like a throw because it's just not something that I use a lot. So it was kind of cool to win a game on that. And then,
yeah, well done.
And then my last game was into Max Bottomer, a fan of the cast, guy I've talked to the last couple Sues, so it was really cool to get to play him. And all I need to say is he had Sorcia 1 Doom Reavers, and I thought he wouldn't play it. and that was it.
Wild card.
And then I got,
how is that matchup?
And then I got shit on. Real bad. So I end 1-2, and then I end up dropping because at that point I'm ready to eat and go hang out. So I don't finish, but I had a good day. All my games were really, really good, and I had a good time. I think I got cocky with the Zal 2 thing, and I think I thought maybe the Morgul 2 would sway him off of Sorcia 1 Doomies, but it didn't. So
now throwing back to Ryan, have you figured out what faction your round one opponent was playing?
I've actually got everything here. So yeah, round one, I don't remember the opponent's name, unfortunately, but it was Kruger 1 in the Tharn list. And that was a kind of interesting game. I dropped Orion into that. I couldn't get the positioning I wanted. The Orion list I kind of tweaked from an older one. I had been running the All Lightning list, and I got rid of that, but I left the Prime Conflux in it. And it worked very well into the Tharn between the magic bullets, the lines.
Was it Kevin Spiro?
That sounds familiar, but okay.
First Kruger,
you know me
one
names.
Player I came across. Go ahead.
So, it was it kind of was a pretty hard counter for him. I ignored almost all of his defensive buffs, and on bottom of one, I killed the Tharn UA that gives out vengeance with magic bullets. And then he moves his beasts in, ambushed, ran his wolf riders around, ambushed in from the side, tried to take away the one zone from me. So I was looking at either getting, just cranking down. I have a bunch of ground pounder and ways of removing that. But he had moved Kruger 1 behind a wall and up into the zone. So I was like, I guess I can just go for it. And at defense 19, Orion doesn't care on feet turn. He had one transfer on him. So the first couple shots, it took a little getting lucky with. But the side guns on the Prime Conflux have lucky, so they get to re-roll. So it was just, I was just two direct shots with them, and then all of the magic bullets, had two magic bullets into him, and then a direct shot once his fury was gone. with the monitor, which is the crit brutal gun. And of course I critted and I ended up rolling four dice damage against him and just wiped him off the table, on the bottom of two. The only reason he had moved up was to keep one of his beasts in control. And after looking at the table, he could have moved to the side a little bit more. I don't know. It was a really hard game for him because I countered so much of what Kruger 1 wants to do. My second game was into Byron. He's playing Cole Grima. That game was rather interesting. I dropped Orion again. Was getting up on attrition. And then, because that was the Mirage game, yeah. So I was able to clear off the center flag. I went up 3-0 on attrition. And I put one few two shield guards around Orion. He was able to kill me basically to the box after getting a crit stationary with Kolgrimma. She had gone completely naked as far as the Fury goes. His last activation he had was his bomber, who was able to get. I was able to shield guard one of the shots, but then I needed just one more shield guard there, and he was able to kill me to the box. And then I played Attilio, which was interesting. I was talking to him about the circle matchup the day before. So he did not drop the Tharn into it. So it was Orion into Kruger 2 with the world's list. Had the fountain, megalith, and then I want to say two of the geomancies. That was weird. I thought I was just done on that game, but Orion surprisingly plays pretty well as a melee force. So I was able to... It took away a large chunk of what I wanted to do because of the -5 range, obviously. But I was able to... That turned into an absolutely brutal game, and it ended up with me with my lights and him with megalith. So I ended up losing that one just because they couldn't take down megalith. One thing that for me the entire weekend, so I went 1-3 and then dropped again to go get food, but I didn't clock once, which is a nice change of pace for me to not lose on clock on a single game. And that includes all of the Iron Arena games from the day before. So I was pretty happy with it.
All right, Matt, I think you are left, buddy.
Yeah. I had a really enjoyable Masters run. Just kind of touch on the broad strokes. I ended up playing a lot of really good opponents throughout the day. I ended up playing Charles round 3, I want to say. And, we played the caster, like exact caster mirror with two solos that were different in our lists. So basically playing the same list into each other. And I ended up being able to win that game. It was really tight, really close, and I used Bulldoze to close it out. But I ended up winning day one, going 4-0, which qualified me for the top 8 on Sunday. I can't really remember too much of Saturday. I was so tired. Like I had said on Friday, I got 3.5 hours of sleep, or I went to bed at 3:30, whatever that translates in time. And so, like, Saturday is just all a blur for me. I remember nothing about it other than, like, playing Charles. I think at one point, Pete came up to me and was like, "You're going to bed now."
And I was like, I was there for that.
And I was like, okay. And then he went and played Captain Sonar for an hour and a half.
Got him.
And I just wandered around being like, "I'm so tired." And everyone was like, "Go to bed." I'm like, "I'm waiting for the Serratis." But yeah, Saturday was super fun. And then we Sunday came along, and I had to play in the top 8 there. I played all my top 8 games on the stream table. You can check them out on Moose Machine. I had a really good time. I played against Nate in the Osram versus Animag matchup, and I was able to close that one out on Assassination when Animag came in to try to even up points and swing attrition a little bit more in her favor. A driller walked over and punched her in the face. The round after that, I played against Marc-Andre LeBlanc, and he played Child, Dark Menagerie, and I played Damiano Steelheads. So just a sea of living dudes against High Arm Grimkin Brick. I was able to close the game out on Scenario and just, like, just sacrifice all of my Deuterinos to hold zones. Highlight of the game, though, is definitely Stannis Brocker. Like, I'm like killing the shit out of this Clockatrice, and I leave it alive on like 7 boxes. It stutters to like the barely edge of the zone, and I'm like, fuck, I think I lose the scenario trade now. What do I do? So I'm like staring at the table, and then I realize Stannis Brocker has bulldoze from the Steelhead theme. So I run him through my entire army and bulldoze the Clockatrice out of my zone, out of the zone, allowing me to score it.
Nice.
So good. Also, the Steelhead Arcanist has Bombshell, which on a critical throws. So he has like this Clockatrice that's just really annoyingly positioned. And I roll the crit Bombshell and throw the Clockatrice like 5 inches into the abyss. I banish him to the Shadow Realm.
crit win for the win there. There you go.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was a great game. Mark's always an absolute pleasure to play. He's a really good player, and I thoroughly enjoyed our game. And that leads us to the finals, where I played against Jake Wilstrop, absolutely one of my favorite people in War Machine. And at the beginning of the entire event, literally when I first saw him, he said, "You know what's going to happen, Matt?" He said, "It's going to be you and me in the finals." And like, obviously, like, I'm like, I had to get there first, you know, kind of a thing. And so there we are at the finals. And the night before, when we were super tired and playing games and stuff, he had said, like, "When we get to the finals table, are we going to play it naked?" And I was like, 100% we are. So we started stripping right before the game.
I saw a picture of that.
I'm sure there's photo. What was that, Pete?
No, go ahead. Finish your story.
I'm sure there's photo evidence of how horrible it was.
Yeah, 100%.
I just need to back up a little bit because we did go out to dinner Saturday night with the British contingent and us, and I watched you two feed each other raw beef with chopsticks like you were high-class geishas. So I feel like... I feel like that's where you lost. Not in the game, but subjecting me to that just display. It was terrible.
I thought it was great.
I also want to back up real quick, because at one point in the night, Saturday, both Baby Michael and Rich Owens were embracing each other for moral and physical support as they walked back from the bathroom to try to get back into the hall. Because they both needed to crutch on one another to walk. And by the time I was able to try to get my phone out for the picture, they were back in the hall. So I don't have any photo evidence of that, but I know it happened, and it was great.
So the event was an absolute blast. I ended up playing Jake in the Ostrom versus Zal 2 match. The game went to turn 7, where I was a few rolls away from winning the game and closing it out. I could not have asked for a better opponent or a better game. It was an absolute joy to play him. And I'm happy that of all of the people that could have won it, it was him. He played it like an absolute gentleman, and I love that man. He's an absolute joy.
Yeah, he's great. I got to hang with him most of the weekend, my smoking buddy, and it was great. It was great sitting there talking, especially because we were both playing Scorn, so that helped because we could talk about the matchups our matchups going forward. So it was great. All of those guys that came over from England, they were fantastic. I had a great time hanging with them.
Yeah, it was a joy. So once the game's done, we shake hands, hug it out, go for a smoke, and then I got on the road with my friends for the nice casual 7 to 8 hour drive home. Where I passed out super hard. It was good. That was a good day. It was a good con. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We played some Captain Sonar and some Secret Hitler Saturday night.
Captain Sonar is so good.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
It's good when your scout knows north, east, west, and south.
Yo, so real quick, just if we're going to go on Captain Sonar a little bit, my opponent I played on stream, Minerva, it was his first time ever playing. He was a goddamn psychic when it came to scout for our team. Remarkable. I don't know how he did it. If you never played Captain Sonar, your ship can go in one of four directions, north, south, east, and west. It moves one space at a time. And you're able to hear the direction the enemy team's going. You just don't know their starting point. So he would, like, draw a couple of their moves, like, trying to, like, outline around islands. Then he would get information. Upon receiving that information, would erase all the lines he drew.
Mm-hmm.
And then about two or three more pieces of information later, again, erasing everything he's drawn every time, just turns to the captain and goes, like, they're here. And then, lo and behold, about a couple moves later, when you're able to shoot a torpedo and you get in range, direct hit.
yeah, it was the most Rain Man shit I've ever seen. Because then I swapped over to his team, was his captain. Like, I don't know how to do this because I don't know where the fuck I'm supposed to go. I was like, it's fine. He'll just tell you where to be. Like, nice. That's not how this works. Like,
it was like a psyker navigating the warp. It was astounding.
So by the time I'm watching this from the side, so I can see both the navigate. Like, I can see down the screen that's in the middle. And so I'm watching him do stuff, and it was scary to just watch him wipe the whole thing and just be like, yep, they're right there. And I'm like looking over on the next side, I'm like, oh my god, he's just got them.
And like, oh, like, nice. 20 moves. Not and then that. He wipes his whole board. Like, what the fuck are you doing? You can't do that.
That in the last round I had Keith, who's drunk out of his mind, and is our scout trying to track where they are. It's just the whole, I think, first 10 moves of the game, he's not doing anything because he's like, oh, I didn't know I was supposed to, like, I didn't know that's the actual direction they're moving. I was like, yeah, yes.
Yeah, I will say, two games in a row, my map, when I was a navigator, matched up identically with them. So I had every move they made.
Followed everything. Yours was skill, no, but it wasn't scary skill.
I don't remember if we lost the one when I was navigator. I don't know, man. We played too many games.
I think we got you.
Maybe.
I don't know. I got to play captain, scout, and engineer all in the same night. It's a fucking good night.
First mate's kind of boring.
Engineer monkey is a party.
Mike Ireland is still the best engineer that's ever existed in the history of the
world. Simon is really good. That Legion player you played against?
Yeah, he was good.
Simon's very good.
Mike will get you anywhere you need to go, though. Doesn't matter. Yeah, but you need a bunch of Norths guaranteed. And everything's out. He'll do it. He's got
guaranteed,
you.
Guaranteed, halfway through the game... you're going to say a direction. He's going to look at you and go like, oh, boy. So there's like a comedy hour halfway through for Mike. It was like, oh, boy, how about any other direction, Captain?
Yeah.
I have, before we close out, Sue, so I think it was Saturday night. I walked into the hobby room. That was my first time being in there this time. And, you know, they'd been posting updates throughout the day on their Facebook page. And there was an announcement that they had a brand new paint line for sale in the hobby room. So I went in to check it out. It's called Legendary Paints. I think the web address is legendarypaints.com. The site is still like under construction, but it's a paint line that was developed by, and I forget the main person, but Ben of Primal Poodle Painting Studio, Aggie's husband, was responsible for a lot of the formulation and the beta testing of the paint. And so on a whim, I bought the whole set. I think it was like a potato. I think the exchange rate was a potato and like a Canadian goose feather.
Sounds right.
By the time the money exchanged. But I got 36 paints, got them home and was painting the very next day. And I'm super impressed with this paint line. I hope they get their site up and running so that I can buy some more because I know I'm going to run out.
So it's not a 16-hour commute to get more?
Exactly. The paint is dropper bottles, so right away that's a huge win. It is also formulated in the same manner as Privateer Press paint, in which they tell you not to eat it, but you could eat it if you want to.
But you could, yeah.
Yeah. The big selling point is... So far, it hasn't separated after a good shake. You know, shitty Army Painter paint separates if you look at it weird. This stuff is really, really smooth. It doesn't separate in a wet palette, which I'm also impressed by. And the pigmentation level is super, super high. Like, I was doing one coats over black primer, so I'm absolutely sold on this paint line. So if you get a chance to check it out, like I said, it is this is a non-paid advertisement. Hopefully they.
I hope you cut me in on this the endorsement check.
No, this is totally unsolicited. It was funny. I like smuggled the bag back into our danger cart And I casually told Trish, hey, I bought some paint. And normally when I do that, that's like two or three bottles. So the next day, she's like, what the fuck? You bought paint.
We're painting the dining room.
Yeah.
So yeah, to wrap Sue up, I had a wonderful time. I was telling Pete this earlier when we were talking. I was like, I think just knowing more people and then seeing everybody again when I go back every year, like the Sue just for me gets, I think I've had a better time every year I've gone. It just gets better and better. You know, thanks to Seth, Aggie, Matt, Justin for running everything, George on the stream, and everybody there for being so nice and welcoming. It was fucking great. Phenomenal weekend.
Yep, 100% agree.
Yeah, 10 out of 10, Wood Convention again.
Definitely, that is by far my favorite convention, and it does get better every year. It's kind of, I'm sure it'll plateau eventually, but it's not anywhere close to it yet.
I'm going to talk to Aggie and Clark and all them and everyone that puts together the events and see if we can have like a Saturday night, midnight competitive Captain Sonar tournament.
There you go. I'm in.
I don't know how it does.
Yeah, for sure.
Could you imagine, I want something to do on Saturday.
Could you imagine how loud more than like three or four games of Captain Sonar going at the same time would be?
It'll be fine. You get like eight teams together. That's a nice little three rounder event. Each round, you do like the best two out of three. Be a good time.
Yeah, we got to rotate some people in. We had a nice little thing going. Go ahead, Matt. I'm sorry.
The Sioux is always one of the best events of the year. It's I look forward to it every year. It's just such a good show. If you haven't gone, I highly recommend going. And if you do go, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys there. It's a fucking wonderful show.
Yep. All right, guys, let's move on to the stuff that came out today. I know normally we don't like to do a lot of CID talk. However, Steamroller is one of the most important ones of the year for us as competitive players. And B, they tend to not change a ton. So I think what we're seeing now is similar to what we're going to see at the end of it. So I want to talk about that a little. First, let's talk about the objectives. So there are three new ones. They are not replacing the current three. So we are testing three new objectives, and they are Dugout, which has Anchor. So you can give a friendly faction model within 4 inches, can't be pushed or placed. Observatory, which can give one friendly faction model within 4 eyeless sight for 1 round. And Treasure Chest, which can give a friendly faction model that allow them to reroll 1 attack and 1 damage roll this turn. So what are everybody's thoughts on the three of those, in addition to the ones that we currently have?
Real quick, wasn't Treasure Chest once per game?
Nope. Oh, it is once per game. I'm sorry. I totally didn't see that.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. It's once per game, both an attack and a damage roll.
I didn't catch that either.
Good catch. Yeah, we've been talking about that all day, and I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
So there's a weird thing about scenarios. So in almost every game of War Machine played, I think majority of players will choose the repair objective. I think out of like all of the games of War Machine I've played, I've chosen not repair maybe 3 or 4 times.
I find myself choosing Pathfinder fairly often, at least with the list that I'm playing.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's representative of where the objective is on the table. Like, a lot of the time, the objective's just not within a place where Pathfinder's a relevant thing you need.
Yeah. Sometimes on your side of the table, you're just like, I don't need this at all for where the objective... Yeah, you're right.
So like that ends up being a thing that happens quite a lot. The other thing that happens is you only take magical when you absolutely need it as well. So it means that you're kind of taking this utilitarian repair objective most of the time. So the three new objectives do add a lot of flavor to that. Obviously, the bunker or whatever it's called objective, the dugout, provides a really cool flexibility tool where you're like, I put this heavy in the zone. It can't be pushed or placed. I am now in the zone. Fuck off. That's really cool. The reroll is not as impactful in most games as people are thinking it will be. A single reroll you have to assign before you do anything once per game doesn't seem that powerful.
I agree.
And then finally, you get the Isle of Sight one, which I think is just going to be either not relevant at all or super relevant.
Yeah, I'm not a super fan. We were talking about this earlier. I'm not a super fan of being able to give Isle of Sight for a round. Like, it's not like the one where it gets Magic Weapon where you get it for one attack, so you're not taking down a Wraith Engine. Like, I like that people have to pay for Isle of Sight, and most factions now have access to it. They just either have to take a Merc solo or use one of their free cards to take a solo with it. So I don't think I like it, especially for something like Battle Engines, where Blind is such a huge counter to them, that just to be able to be like, well, fuck that. You know, one of the only tools I have for dealing with it is just gone.
I have a counterpoint.
Go ahead.
So I think that in general, we're seeing the rules of War Machine expand at a rate that, like, it's just, there's so much stuff in the game. And because there's so much stuff in the game, you just can't have every tool in your list. Like, you're like, oh, I put the Guidance guy and now I don't have Eilish, right? I put this guy and now I don't have that guy. Like, you can only fit in so many tools. So I think giving the objectives a little bit more flexibility in the tools they bring is actually a really interesting way to kind of, like, make it a little bit easier to build lists and not just get absolutely destroyed, because as Pete said in his Masters run, guys just didn't have solves for clouds.
Sure, and that's fair, but isn't that part of the process? Is like, here are the things that this list is weak to. Like, do we want everyone to always be able to have all the answers all the time?
Well, I mean, like, it's not about having all the answers. It's about having some of the answers.
No,
I
exaggerated a little. You know what I mean? But,
like I understand your point. I understand your point completely. As a competitive player, the most frustrating thing for me is I can't have all the answers in my list pair.
Sure.
At all. Like, I literally can't have all the answers in my list pair. It's just not possible. So having an objective where I'm like, okay, in this one matchup, I get a single gun that can see through stealth, or I get a single guy who can see through the cloud, right? No, like, that feels like a relevant thing.
No, it is, and I like that that's something you currently have to pay for or take your merc slot. Like, I don't love it on an objective, but I also think if this went to for a turn, I think I'd probably be okay with it. Because you could still remove blind off a model. Like, that turn.
You mean for a single attack? Or
no,
do you mean...
No, for a turn. Instead of a round.
Isn't it already a turn?
It's a round.
Oh, so models can't be blinded.
Correct.
Oh, I see what you're saying. It should probably be a turn, not a round. That's probably an oversight.
Yeah, that's fair.
And again, you could still remove blind off that model, because you could still give it Eyeless Sight, and then it loses blind. You just can't make it immune to it. And I think that's... To me, I think that's better.
Mm.
That's if they did change it to just turn, I personally I'm in the same boat here. I very much actually like having more utility out of the objectives, because especially when I'm playing my convergence stuff, it's always going to be the repair one. It's never anything else. They might as well not have abilities. So it's kind of neat to see the anti-place and the true sight one. I like that.
Pete, jump in here because you got a real good idea.
Well, it's debatable. If you're Mick Waters, it's not. But if you're Pete, it is. I want the objective to have all of the abilities. I want them to just take all six, put it on one objective, and at the beginning of your turn, at the start of the maintenance phase, you pick which ability you have for the objective. So I think this would do a couple things. One, it would make the objective be probably one of the most viable targets on the board, because you have the ability to just say, like, oh, I have a magic weapon this turn. Oh, now I need to repair. Oh, now I need Pathfinder. The objective to me sometimes seems like an afterthought, or, hey, I'm going to pick up a point and then, stall out the rest of the game. I'd like to see it prioritized more, and I think it would be a neat rule, you know, just to have everything.
I will say, if it had everything, that is going to be dead bottom of two every game you play. It's got,
sure.
Which I guess is the point of that. But I mean, that's, yeah, if you don't have something to go get it with, they're just going to have a pretty massive advantage.
I like it. I like the idea.
I think it's an interesting idea. I think it's a lot of impact for a model that is not in every scenario and is in weird places on the table, and is already relevant because of how scenario works. But it's definitely an interesting idea, Pete.
I would like to see it get play tested and see how, if everyone feels like it's too strong, because I like it in theory, but it could be one of those things that would change once I saw it. But I know when Pete first told me that, I was like, oh, I really like that. That's super interesting, and I could see that being cool. But I could see that being too strong as well. I do like the incentive of incentivizing killing the objective, which I feel like outside of the one CP isn't really there right now. Brad, any thoughts before we move on to the scenarios?
No, I don't know. They all seem fine. I actually did not notice that the Fortune's Favor, whatever the ability is, was only once per game.
So that one
loses a lot of interest real quick for me. That it's once a game. I do like the thought behind changing the Isle of Sight one to only lasting a turn. I think you guys have said it all. Know how much to add.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the scenarios. From the 2018 packet, we are keeping Spread the Net, Invasion, and Recon 2. And the other three are getting replaced with either some version of themselves or something else. The first one's King of the Hill, which is basically just the pit with the zones, rectangle zones, pushed out to the edge of the table. And the objective moved to the left bottom corner of the zone, and then a flag dead center in the circle. Matt, I'll go ahead and start with you. What do you think about King of the Hill?
So King of the Hill is obviously a super wide scenario. Like it's basically the pit too, but wider. It's
crazy.
it's fine. I have some opinions. Obviously, like, they talked about it on the dev chat today, and they hit all the smart points. Ambushers are going to be a lot better and more impactful on those scenarios. Bricks are going to be a little bit harder to succeed with on those scenarios. The really big thing is, like, not being able to contest multiple scenario elements with one model.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of people think about how this impacts the game, but, like, you can't contest both scenario elements with a huge base, which is hugely impactful.
oh boy!
Wow! It's one of those things where, like, every scenario we currently play in the packet, two elements can be contested by a single base. Like Recon 2, you can contest a flag in a zone. Spread the Net, you can contest three elements with a single huge base, or two with a large base, so on and so forth. Like every scenario, like we're seeing the introduction of ones that you're only going to be contesting one scenario element, and that means that, like, you're just not generating value off that. Means you have to play the scenario differently. You have to have more models to give up, so on and so forth.
Unless you want to throw a dead center to contest the flag.
I was going to say, do you think that's why they added the flag?
Good question. Because Spread the Net is going to be staying. A huge base touches both the circle, the rectangle, and within four of the flag?
Yes.
I never knew that.
Yep. I have a really good story about that. We'll share it some other time.
Sorry, keep going, but I feel like I should have known that and just didn't.
I'm looking this up now because I can't picture it. Go ahead, keep going. I'm sorry.
So that's the dimension. So, like, you end up in the situation where, like in the pit too, you have a brick, you put it like in your rectangle and the center zone, and you have locked down that center zone. And then you also threat far enough to contest the far zone. So you kind of end up in the situation where you're playing a lateral game. But with the new scenario, you're just going to end up in dead space when you charge. So you have to have other models to run to contest that rectangle. It's a really interesting change to how the game plays. It means that games are going to be playing more horizontally as opposed to vertically on that scenario. When you're trying to pressure scenario.
Pete, initial thoughts on this one?
So, I'm super excited about this. One of my big complaints have been, I personally feel that ambushing models don't do as much work as they potentially can. And right off the bat, ambushy models are going to be able to take the objective. You know, it's easily within range. So I'm really excited to see that change. More importantly, though, I'm now hyper-focused on the CID because Trish crept into the room and showed me a post. Apparently, the TEQ 2 or 3, is it the 3? Yeah, it's 3. They're going to use one of the CID scenarios picked at random as one of the scenarios for the event.
Oh,
I'm super pumped for that. Yeah, that's super exciting.
Brad, any thoughts?
So, to Matt's point on kind of what they're saying on the screen, how ambushes get better, I don't doubt that. But what I think is interesting is both with this scenario and the others we'll get to in a moment, with things going wider, I actually think that not only are ambushes going to get quote-unquote better, maybe see more prevalence, but also then in turn, I think you might see more Jaws of the Wolf and more Ravens of War. Ravens of War may be less likely than Jaws, but if the theme benefit means that my lists, convenient and reliable, like path to victory of always having a contesting unit that's going to come in behind my army in a zone on a flank, doesn't get to do that, and I have to play a fairer game, can throw a lot of wrenches.
So, absolutely. And I also like how with the scenario, it's going to, I feel like it's going to favor a multi-battle group type of list. So bringing in a junior or like a Jack Marshall or something like that who can, you know, fuck off and go hang out at the edge of the board is going to be a good play for that list or for that scenario.
Yeah. So this is obviously more live than the pit. And I know none of us have played it, so probably tough to say. Matt, how would you rank this as far as a live scenario?
I mean, the Pit 2 is a really weird scenario. Anyone who's ever played it knows that, like, the Pit 2 is just, like, you grind your fucking armies into each other until someone loses, and then you win on scenario. This feels like... it feels like more of the same, but a little bit different. Like, whoever holds the center zone is going to be scoring 2 points on their turn, mm-hmm. plus a potential third of the rectangle. Which means that this scenario can become lopsided very easily, and it kind of supports the holding the center zone, King of the Hill style, it's the name, King of the Hill style army. So a potential line of play you'll have on the scenario is like a big brick walks up and surrounds the center flag and forsakes the two side zones. Because if he forsakes the two side zones, he can reliably score the same amount of points.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you end up in a situation where bricks just get to play brickier on this scenario, and infantry don't, like, if you're playing like a super wide ambushy list with a bunch of like power 11 dudes, and some dude puts up a brick of armed 21 or 23 models in the middle and blocks off all contest spaces for the flag, you're just going to be not able to do anything.
Sure.
So kind of one last point before we move on to the next scenario. Mm-hmm. With the pit now or spread the net or a lot of these scenarios where there's elements that are 6 inches off the edge, you'll have opponents contest those elements with bases just barely in on the side towards the table edge. Means that the model's only still about 3 to 4 inches off the edge of the table anyway. So the models you have to clear really aren't changing that much in distance because they can't be just towing in the far edge because at that point they're off the table. So it doesn't mean your scoring model might have to be farther over to the side, but the contesting models really aren't moving that much, and it's actually harder to contest because now there's only 3 edges you can get in on as compared to 4.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to Bunkers, which is the standoff.
You have to call it by its
what is
its
the
official name.
What it, which is?
I swear it's not actually Incursion.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah, that was hilarious. That was pretty funny.
All right, so scenario number 2, I swear it's not Incursion, is basically incursion, but with the standoff rectangle zones.
And done.
And objectives. So we're out.
Aren't the zones farther back now?
They are. Inches? Yeah, they're only 12 inches to the back edge.
Compared to 15 from standoff.
Correct.
So is that to counterbalance the whole I take the center of the table, you lose because you don't know because you can score your defensive zone, do you think?
I mean, if you take the center of the table in this and you and your opponent only scores the center zone, he's
still losing. You're still losing if you so that doesn't counter that at all.
That's my thing. Like it doesn't seem to, if that's what they were going for, it doesn't seem to that's incursion,
not
right?
What they're going for, right? I mean, so like the whole thing is that the way this is set up is the flags are 12 inches apart from each other. Meaning that you can contest both with a large base perfectly centered. That's how math works, right? I'm not insane. And then additionally, you can... okay, so this is another scenario that's set up to...
Yeah, sure.
4 inches, 12 inches off center of each other.
4 and 4? There's still 4 inches in between.
Correct.
What's the
width, and a large
base, what's the width of a medium base?
No. Less than 1 inch. So...
A medium base is an inch and a half, right?
I'm going to look
it
up.
Maybe I'm just wrong. Maybe I'm just full of shit. It's fine. Contest both with a huge base, sure.
Yeah, there you go. Done. Done. No question there.
Yeah, sure. Moving on. Point ends up being is that this is like a straight-up stand-up and brawl scenario. Their mission statement was to try to eliminate these kind of scenarios. But, like, if you look at this, I wish I had, like, a screen writer to draw on. But the entire fighting area of the table is 24 inches. The center 24-inch zone between the flags is where all of the fighting is going to happen. You're going to have a brick spread out and try to take the center flag, plus contest the two outside flags, force their opponent to commit to the brick, and then fight from there. In an infantry versus infantry matchup, this allows you to create a strong flank versus weak flank. I don't really like these kinds of scenarios that have essentially one scoreable point for each player every turn. I feel like standoff was really bad because it was deploy on either side of each other and fight until you lose your army, and this looks like it's more of the same. The flags either need to go wider here to promote like units playing wider and bricks having a harder time just breaking up, the flags need to go like Mirage and go diagonal.
I think this is the most likely of the three to see changes. Would anyone else agree with that?
I agree.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why we're going back down a road with incursion, but we'll see. I haven't played it. Anybody have any other thoughts on this one before we move on to the last one?
Nay.
Okay, great.
Brad, well, did you look up the information? Did you get the metrics?
Yeah, a large base cannot contest both by being exactly in the middle. You are, unfortunately, not wide enough.
All right, cool.
Okay. All right, and the last one is Anarchy. I don't know how to describe this one easily. There's an objective 16 inches up and 21 inches in. There's a flag 10 inches in front of that. Same on the opposite side, and then there are two circle zones on the far edges, 3 inches in from the table edge and 18 inches up, 24 inches to the center. Did I do it?
Okay. I'm happy to start off on this one. I really like how creative this one is, right? So like we can look kind of at the previous steamroller packets and kind of look like a year-over-year progression and see, like, the small changes they've made. Maybe they'll rotate a zone, they'll add a flag here, they'll move the flag from the center of the zone to the corner when it comes to recon. Like, very small, minutia-level changes. And this is throwing spaghetti at the wall. I love it. I think it's going to be interesting in terms of how people want to play it, whether you're trying to take the middle and camp the flags or going hard for a zone. I think this one is tremendously, tremendously interesting. I don't know what kind of lists are going to favor it compared to the others. A 12-inch circle zone that's only 3 inches off the edge is both, one, a very large space to clear, and two, very close to a table edge.
Very wide.
The difference here being, even though it's closer to the edge compared to whatever the name of the first scenario, the new scenario we talked about tonight, it's not on the table edge, so you don't lose space on all possible edges where you can have a model just towing in, whereas you lose a whole side from the rectangles in that first scenario. So you can have extremely wide models about standing on the table edge still in a zone to contest it. Yeah, I don't know what this does in a competitive landscape in terms of what let's look to play on it, or if someone's really going to play on it like a Magnus 2 or Kruger 2 or something like that, where they can make a really strong scenario push. But that uncertainty leaves me excited.
So that's actually a really valid point here. I think the scenario is really fucking cool. It's dynamic, opens up a lot of really cool and creative play solutions. Like, if you're like playing against like a Grimkin-style brick of like armor 21 fuck-off heavies, and they're just like, we're going to take these center flags. And you're like, cool, I'm going to play super wide and try to score both these zones on my turn.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, you just get to play, like, it's a solution for that matchup. With that said, though, I do feel like this is a scenario where Magnus 2 just is fucking crazy, right? Like, he's like, oh, all of your models that can run to my flags are over there, feed on them all, score 3 on my turn by killing your objective, automatically win the game.
Yep. Seems bad.
Yeah, it seems real bad.
Especially because the scenario elements are so tight in the center.
It's so close.
Like, it creates an opportunity for him to just, like, I just win this game. So, like, it's okay that, like, that happens. That's how it works on Mirage and Spread the Net already, so it's not too bad. But it is one of those scenarios. The scenario is going to be incredibly live. You're gonna walk up, one player is going to be like, all right, and I do the attrition push for the flags, and now you're going to be down 3 points and have to figure a way out.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm excited. This is one of the few scenarios CIDs I actually will partake in, because it's easy. You just set this up instead of a normal scenario and play it out.
Yep. I mean, at least comparing to Mirage in terms of the Magnus 2 argument, I mean, there's one less flag on the table, and the zones are closer to the table edge. So while he can still just have the feet win games, I think those are going to be harder to just land on than what it was in Mirage.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. I do know that this is another scenario where having a big bricky thing sit in the middle is going to be very powerful. Like, this feels like whoever clears the middle first wins.
I don't know if you win, like, because one round of scoring doesn't get it, right? So, like, if you clear the middle first, but you're not getting up very high on attrition, it's very easy to come in from the sides to contest those flags.
Yeah, sure. So, like, what I'm saying is, Brad, guy pushes up, gets both flags and the objective, which mm-hmm. it's really hard to protect your objective, and then, like, contests the zones with his heavies. You now have to kill his shit to score anything. So that means that the onus is on you to not only contest everywhere, but also kill his models that are contesting, which is what the problem with Standoff was, the problem with Recon 2, is the problem with all the scenarios that you have to kill models to effectively score any points. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but isn't that, like, part of the game? Like, killing your opponent's models to score points? Am I being naive here?
The difference is, like, on Spread the Net. So, like, using two scenarios that exist as an example, comparing this to Spread the Net, where, like, in Spread the Net, you can almost always score your rectangle and your flag in response. So, like, there's a line of play where, like, your opponent pushes up really aggressively and scores 3. And your response is, contest everywhere, score 2. And, like, now they can't effectively win the game anymore on their next turn because you've scored the 2 to equalize it. On this scenario, it's very likely that you walk up, score 3, your opponent more than likely scores 1 at most, and then you either win the game or up by 4 points the following turn.
Yeah, I mean, this falls back to the game Grant had where his opponent basically didn't have to make any attacks after building Fort Kickass.
Yeah, that was different, though.
I mean, like, I'm not quite saying that. I'm just saying that this is a scenario that rewards armies that hold ground effectively. Like, if you can get up to the middle of the table and hold that ground, like a really strong defensive feat as an example, like, this is the kind of scenario that really rewards that type of play, where you're like, put a solo on each flag, kill your objective feat with my control feat, my defensive feat, contest everywhere on the table, you're not going to score any points at all, and then I'm going to win the game the following turn.
I think you very likely could be correct with that line of thinking. My only bit of cautioning to applying kind of like in-game experience you've garnered to this point to this scenario and the first one is that with the elements being wider out, those control feats that really lock down and make it some models just exist in spaces, have to exist in spaces farther away from each other. All across the table. So unless the control range for that caster is like a pulse, what happens when you do it, like if they have to stay in, like that caster is going to be very aggressively at the table. I'm getting at is with things being wider out, I think that that's hard center push early, unless you're getting an attrition lead, just means that you're going to lose a lot of your army to the attack back. And then we'll get caught on scenario as the game progresses. And like, don't get me wrong, that's, I think, how like a natural progression of games should go. But with elements being farther out and models now going to be less supported as they're farther out contesting all these elements, I think you have a good chance to lose more models on the way to a scenario victory if you're going to go that route, like a really hard scenario push.
So let's just put this in the context of Ostrom, right? Ostrom puts a solo on each flag, wraps his objective in heavies, and feeds and puts two heavies in each zone, kills your objective, flips the clock. What's your counterplay?
So in a vacuum, incredibly difficult. If there's any slam plays, if there's any TK plays, one heavy in each zone is very easy to get out. Or if you're a caster that's just trying to crank damage dials, killing one feated heavy is not completely impossible. Right.
And I'm not saying like one feated heavy. I mean, in a list with seven, he puts two in each zone, right?
Sure. And if that's the case, then you're able to contest flags and kill an objective. And his feet only exist for that one turn, so his threat range has become a lot harder to leverage. So you can go to the outsides of the circle and threaten for the next turn. Like once the objective is dead, like you can't get another point off of it the next round.
That's true. So you're up by like, but this is the situation I'm trying to explain, Brad, is that objective's really deep and it's very easy to protect. Like it's harder to protect for the player going second, like on the like essentially on the top of three. Is the most vulnerable and the objective is going to be in the game. Because on the bottom of two, the models are not going to be far enough up the table on the bottom player to really reach how deep that objective is. Like, that objective is where the flag is on recon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a super deep objective. It's only going to be reachable by players on really the top of three. That's going to be, like, the first real time you reach it. I'm just saying that this scenario is, like, a very stand-up and brawl scenario.
I mean, that could very likely be fine. I think of all the scenarios presented, I think this is the most likely to see changes on a week-to-week basis. It is the most new, the kind of the most adventurous in terms of design, kind of similar to how Mirage was last year. I don't anticipate this scenario ending the CAD process looking the same.
I agree. They already talked about it on the stream. They want to move. They're talking about moving the flags a little bit further apart. So like putting them a little bit deeper in their respective sides,
sure.
Which I think fixes a lot of the problems I've outlined here. I think like they're already aware of a lot of the things I've levied against it. Like, if those flags are like 2 inches further up and down the table respectively, then it becomes a game of like, you actually have to have models in position and the top player can't actively get to the second flag with the solo right. Most of the time.
So you're saying 4 inches off the center line, not two.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that changes a lot.
Yeah. And I think that's an appropriate fix. I also think pushing the objective about an inch or two further back solves a lot of problems, too.
Maybe five, like, so for point of reference, they're not as close to the center as I think is what the scenario is laying out, but the flags and spread the net are 5 inches off the center line. You're proposing four, mm-hmm. effectively just about the same. And I cannot remember scoring my opponent's flag and spread the net any round earlier than round four or five. Right, it's usually like attrition has gone fairly strongly for one player or the other, allowing you to get onto their flag. But like the early kind of posturing turns, rounds two and rounds three, I don't remember ever squaring my opponent's flag.
Yeah, I agree with you. Just for a reference, the forward flag in this is squareable by AD solos currently.
That's a good point.
So like Iris, Kel'Balok, pretty much anything that's AD can reach it.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see what changes come week to week. I between the first scenario we talked about, which I cannot remember the name, and I keep referring to as the first scenario, and this
King
one,
of the Hill.
King of the Hill, thank you. And this scenario where elements are moving closer to table edges, I think it's very interesting and something that I don't think breaks scenario. Like I think it's a worthwhile thing to explore.
Yeah, I definitely think that we should be focusing up and as a community putting input on this. This is. Are the next year of our life, right? Like, this is what we're going to be playing for the next year.
Yep.
And test it. see what you like and you dislike. I really like all three of these scenarios. I think with very minor tweaks, we're going to, like, if on the second scenario, the flags went 2 inches wider, so they were 14 apart instead of 12. On King of the Hill, I think King of the Hill is just great the way it is. And I think this last scenario, if the flags move an inch or two, we'll start seeing, like, a really live scenario that you just can't pile up models on. And like, you just can't do the standoff thing where you grind, and then eventually you win, right?
Yeah.
So just to clarify, the three scenarios that went away are Invasion, Mirage, and Standoff?
Standoff, the Pit 2, and Mirage.
Oh, the Pit 2. You're right. Sorry.
Invasion, Recon 2, and Spread the Net is staying. I would have rather seen Invasion go and seen one of the other three stay. Preferably, I guess Standoff. I really don't like Invasion.
Invasion's really rough. I'm not a super big fan of it. I think my favorite scenario out of the entire packet is Spread the Net, which is weird because last year it definitely wasn't my favorite.
Yeah, I didn't love it last year, and then Mirage came out, and I was like, oh, no, this is fine.
Let's play this. Yeah, Spread the Net's great now.
Let's play this. All right, guys, I think that was a long enough episode. We're at about an hour 40, so I think it's time to call it there. But thanks to everyone who we saw and got to hang out with at the Sioux. Thanks to you guys for hanging out at the Sioux. Always a blast to hang out with my dudes. And we'll see what gets changed next week. So for all of us here, thanks for listening.